Idaho may be synonymous with potatoes, but the state is also one of the largest dairy producers in the country. Like much of the agriculture sector, a majority of the labor on dairies comes from outside the U.S. With immigration one of the leading issues the Trump administration says it wants to tackle, Matt Gillum went to a dairy to speak with workers who live in the shadows.
The cow's hooves gently clack as they stand in the milking parlor, their udders attached to automated milkers. They take it well, the clanking noise and the machinery. Tending to the cows as they cycle through the parlor is Pedro.
I started to work at 3 a.m. to milk the cows. My sweatshirt is torn. I'm all dirty from cow poop. My pants are wet. I'm all dirty. This is all part of my job.
Pedro came to the U.S. from Mexico 20 years ago with a desire to work but no documentation. After a stint in Phoenix, he found his way to Idaho and got a job in the dairy industry. The work is hard and, like many manual labor positions, is a job many Americans wouldn't even consider.
No, I don't believe that the people who were born here want to work in the fields. I've seen that they work 1 hour or part-time and they quit.
Milking happens 365 days a year, 7 days a week, whether it's windy or rainy or cold. It's just very difficult work.
This is the owner of the dairy in southern Idaho where Pedro works. She employs several undocumented workers and doesn't want to be identified. We'll call her Sherry.
In America, we've always had jobs that Americans aren't willing to do. We've always needed an immigrant workforce to do those kind of jobs.
President Trump's fiery campaign rhetoric resonated in the rural region where Sherry's dairy is located. Many counties in the vicinity voted for the GOP by margins north of 70%. With Trump's determination to secure the U.S. border with Mexico, many undocumented dairy workers living in the shadows are afraid. Pedro married an American in 2010 and received his documentation in 2015. His brother Juan, who worked with him on the dairy, is still without papers.
Well, there has always been fear, especially being undocumented. But now they're trying to categorize us as drug dealers, rapists, in other words, criminals. We are here working pretty much every day, making an honest living. And they know where these criminals are. They know where they can find them.
Juan is 31. He came to the U.S. over a decade ago. After crossing into California and working in landscaping there, he headed north to Idaho to join his brother Pedro. To get his job, Juan filled out an application and made up some of the numbers his employer asked for.
I believe that if they wanted to check their status, that it would make a difference. But since we're talking about agriculture work, work that really nobody wants to do, they're willing to look the other way and not risk not having any employees.
Forms ask for things like residency status or social security numbers, and workers provide them. Dairy owners, like Sherry, say they take the information provided to them by employees at face value.
Because they are the people that are willing to do the job, and they do the job well, and there is no legal system to hire somebody year-round, it is pretty well accepted that you accept it. It's part of the system that nobody wants to talk about, but we all participate in.
One visa program, the H-2A, allows farmers to bring in foreign-born workers, but it only lets those workers stay in the U.S. 2 to 10 months. That's not good enough for year-round dairy operations. The head of the Idaho Dairymen's Association, Bob Narabout, says the dairy sector makes up a third of the agriculture industry in Idaho, contributing $3.5 billion to the state's GDP. Nationwide, he says Idaho is the fourth biggest dairy producer.
The rural economy of Idaho, so the economy of Magic Valley and basically the rural economy across the state, is dependent on foreign-born labor. For those in agriculture that aren't seasonal and temporary, we don't have a visa program.
Back on the dairy, Sherry, the owner, says she and others would love a legal framework for hiring workers.
If we had a visa system, it doesn't have to lead to a path to citizenship. I think people should have that opportunity. But at this point, if there was a legal year-round visa system, we would participate in it for sure.
As for her undocumented employees, they too wish there was a legal system in place for them to stay and fill the jobs native-born citizens won't do. Should he get caught in an immigration raid, Juan says,
I really don't have a plan. The only thing is that my wife is a citizen and she would be able to stay here with the children, but they're going to suffer as well. The only reality that I have is that I'm here undocumented.
Juan's situation isn't uncommon, and the specter of deportation facing him is shared by millions of undocumented workers nationwide. With directives from the Trump administration broadening the spectrum of who's made a priority case for removal from the country, the safest place for those doing the dirtiest and hardest jobs remains out of sight. In southern Idaho's Dairy Region, I'm Matt Gillum for KBSX News.
While a deal looks likely to extend it, Friday remains the deadline for Congress to pass a budget bill to avoid a government shutdown. Some people in Idaho hope the budget includes money for schools in Timber Country. Frankie Barnhill has more.
Skip Hall has been a teacher at Grangeville High School for 31 years. His early American history class with freshmen and sophomores will be one of his last. He's retiring at the end of the school year. As Hall's class works together on projects, he takes a moment to reflect on the state of education in his district.
The biggest thing that I see is lack of choice for the students.
Hall says kids in wealthy districts have more opportunities. His students are at a disadvantage simply because of where they live. Grangeville High is in the Mountain View School District, a sprawling and sparsely populated part of Idaho County that goes from the Oregon border to the Montana border. Most of that land is owned by the federal government, land that's off the books.
80% of Idaho County is non-taxable property. Without the Rural Schools Act, we would be forced to ask patrons to increase their taxes a whole lot to keep our schools at this level.
Hall is talking about the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act, or SRS. The funding program passed Congress in 2000 and was designed to help rural counties with a lot of federal land, counties like this one struggling from a shrinking timber industry. But the last time Congress funded the act was in 2015, and those payments went out to schools in 2016. And for district business manager Becky Hogg, that makes for some really difficult decisions.
We've come to rely on it as a significant chunk of our operating budget.
Hogg says the school district received SRS payments of about $1 million per year, the largest share of any district in the state. That's about 10% of their budget. She says after careful planning, the district will have enough money to fund current teachers and classes through the coming fiscal year. But after that, things could get dicey.
We're at a disadvantage from Boise schools and the bigger schools. Secure rural school funds, that helps us fund those extra teachers that we have.
That's District Superintendent Kent Stokes. Because of how spread out the district is, Stokes hires more teachers than the state will pay for under its funding formula, whereas the federal SRS money helps pay for those teachers to work in small and remote places like Kuski, about 40 miles down a winding mountain highway from the district office in Grangeville. Here in Kuski, five high school students are working on calculus problems. Their classroom is mostly just empty desks, and the small group of students sit together in the middle of the room as their teacher works with them. Principal Randall Miskin says if SRS funding isn't renewed, classes with low enrollment like this calculus course could disappear, and students would have to do more of their learning online.
If we lose this funding, we probably will have to go back to where we're offering one class fits all type things, which really does a disservice for kids in rural areas.
Miskin says the students he serves come from working class families, and their parents went straight to work in the timber industry after finishing high school. But now that way of life isn't feasible.
When the timber is going great, our school is going to do great, our community is going to do great. But when the timber industry goes bottom up or struggles, it really impacts us hard here.
School Secretary Cindy Dollar remembers when things were better.
I'm actually fourth generation here in the Valley. When I was here in high school, from the timber dollars we made, we were one of the richest districts in the state.
Dollar thinks if the forests could open up to more logging, closed down lumber mills could return, and the district wouldn't need to depend on SRS money. She can't help but get emotional when asked what it's been like to watch her community struggle.
What does that feel like?
Makes me want to cry.
Back at the district office in Grangeville, Superintendent Kent Stokes says absent a boost in federal funding or a change to logging policy, the community has had to raise their own money. So in March, voters approved a one-year $2.6 million levy for the schools. But Stokes says he can't assume voters will go for another funding boost the next time they're asked.
And we understand, you know, nobody wants to pay more property tax than what they do.
There is some congressional support to reauthorize SRS, but the superintendent isn't holding his breath.
We have written letters to our senators and anybody that will actually listen, I guess.
But he says there's some new hope that a political solution can be found under President Trump. And since 78% of Idaho County voted for the Republican leader, that's where most people here have placed their bets. For KBSX News, I'm Frankie Barnhill, reporting from Grangeville.
Towns and cities across Idaho are preparing for the upcoming total solar eclipse on August 21st. Small towns like Weezer, on the western edge of the state, have been preparing for the influx for more than a year. Last week, Washington County commissioners passed a preemptive emergency declaration in case they end up needing more resources to deal with the event. Samantha Wright drove an hour northwest of Boise to find out what Weezer is facing this summer.
The gymnasium at Park School in Weezer is full of third, fourth, and fifth grade students. Standing next to the stage, Principal Angela Halverson introduces Assistant Professor Brian Jackson from Boise State University.
And he is going to talk to us all about this cool thing that's coming, the total solar eclipse. Can you please give him a round of applause?
Jackson is traveling around Idaho this summer to talk to kids and adults about the eclipse.
The moon's shadow is going to pass right through your city. The moon is going to completely block out the sun, as seen here in Weezer, and it's going to be as dark as night for like 2 minutes.
Jackson's been working with people in Weezer for almost a year to prepare.
Weezer is one of the best places in the United States to see the eclipse. So you guys are probably going to have a lot of people here on that day.
That's a bit of an understatement, says Patrick Nauman, the owner of Weezer Classic Candy, a vintage store in the center of town.
Hordes. We're expecting hordes of people. We're now making plans to be able to accommodate somewhere between 50 and 60,000 for that morning.
Nauman is co-chairman of the Weezer Eclipse Festival. That 60,000 number, more than 10 times the town's population, makes him a little giddy.
It's a lot of people. As a tri-county area, Washington County, Payette County, and Malheur County, the latest estimates are 300,000 people in that three-county area to view the eclipse.
Nauman says Weezer, near the border of Oregon, lies very close to the middle of the path of totality. That's the moment in which the moon will completely cover up the sun. Add in the fact that the area traditionally has pretty clear weather in August. That makes Weezer a coveted eclipse viewing spot. Nauman's heard people are coming from all over the world.
It seems like every day, either our Chamber of Commerce or our school district gets another call from another group of, you know, 50 to 100 to 200 people that are planning on being here.
The hotels from LeGrand to Boise are full. Motels in Weezer started eclipse bookings 6 years ago. Most of the campsites are gone. The Eclipse Committee is working with the school district to open up all four schools, including 9 acres at the high school, for viewing. Memorial Park has been set aside to hold up to 10,000 people.
We have a lot of logistics to work out, obviously, because we've got to have additional emergency services on staff, and we've got to have water stations on staff and first aid stations and those kind of things manned around town.
Nauman is renting porta potties while working with the fire department, local sheriff, and state police in Idaho and Oregon. The influx of people will likely jam Weezer cell phone towers, so local ham radio operators will be stationed around town to report emergencies or problems. Weezer is also working with the Idaho and Oregon transportation departments. Nauman's worried that thousands of people will wake up that Monday morning in August and decide to drive in all at once on Highway 95.
It's a two-lane highway, you know, once you leave the interstate coming into Weezer. So we're really trying to encourage people to plan and think ahead.
Weezer is planning a 4-day festival around the eclipse, and he hopes people can come early and spend some time and money. He says this winter was hard for the area, Between too much snow and too much spring flooding, businesses suffered.
And there's been some economic downturn just a little bit, you know, some economic crunch, I guess you could say, because of Mother Nature throughout the course of the winter and the spring.
Around the block from Nauman's candy store is startling evidence of that downturn. A large building has been smashed in half. A never-ending winter snowfall built up on many Weezer roofs, and some, like this one, were literally crushed under the weight. A few blocks away, local resident Barbara Barber points to where the back wall of the town's only grocery store still stands. The rest of the building was demolished by the accumulation of too much snow.
With all the collapses and things and the heavy snow, and it lasted for such a long period of time, people didn't come here that usually would come, and that's a big impact in a place like this.
Barber has watched Weezer struggle this year. She says the eclipse comes at just the right time.
It will be a shot in the arm, a real boost right when we need it.
Like many locals, Barber is bringing in a group of people to watch the eclipse. She's planning a backyard brunch for at least a dozen friends. She's worried about traffic, too, and crowds, but...
I'm certain that we'll be prepared. We're all like hosts and hostesses. And we'll open up our arms and say welcome.
Back at Park School, the lecture is over, but kids are still asking questions. Principal Angela Halverson says her kids and the rest of the town are getting excited.
I think people are really starting to realize that this is the real deal. This is going to be huge.
Weezer is just one of the state's prime viewing spots. Unofficial estimates say 500,000 people could travel to Idaho for the eclipse in August. It's a lot of activity for just over 2 minutes of eclipse time, but according to residents in Weezer, it's just what they need. For KBSX News, I'm Samantha Wright.
On Thursday, people critical of the Senate proposal to replace Obamacare staged sit-ins at Republican offices across the country. While the Senate is on recess, the protesters hope to get the attention of their elected officials. In Boise, a group of women took a similar action, but with a more maternal touch. Frankie Barnhill has this report.
The parking lot outside Senator Mike Crapo's office in downtown Boise is full of minivans, as moms and kids carrying signs cram into the lobby.
So guys, we're going to head up in just a minute. If everyone, including kids, wants to take a quick minute and come sign this card we're leaving behind for the senator to go with the milk and cookies.
That's Melanie Falwell, a Boise activist who organized the sit-in. But unlike other progressive groups protesting the Senate bill, this gaggle of at least 30 mothers and dozens of kids held a mom in, bringing cookies and milk to Crapo's staff. Amber LaBelle is juggling homemade chocolate chip cookies and her two daughters. As they head upstairs to the senator's office, LaBelle's 3.5-year-old daughter asks her, "Where's Senator Crapo?"
I don't know. I wonder if Senator Crapo's going to be here. I hope he's here.
Crapo's communications director, Lindsay Nothern, greets the group and leads them into a conference room. The chairs fill as kids spread their coloring books on the table and little ones snack on Cheerios. One baby sits on the floor at her mom's feet. Her mother, Cynthia Wireman, hands her a small American flag to keep her entertained. Wireman then turns to speak directly to Nothern, first introducing her son, who sits on her lap.
He has asthma and allergies, and it's getting worse, obviously, as we're entering the fire season and the air quality is not great. If we were to lose our Medicaid coverage, I would have to choose going back to work, which with six children, you could just imagine how restrictive that would be.
Nothern takes notes as the women go around the room expressing their concerns over the Senate health care bill. One mom holds up a picture of her son, who's in therapy today, and begins to cry, thinking of what it would be like to lose coverage. According to the Urban Institute, as many as 30,000 Idaho children would lose insurance under the bill. The discussion is calm, although it's clear that Crapo's staff and the women are not going to agree over some policy points.
I've run the numbers, and we will be paying significantly more for health care.
Well, because of the taxes that came in with the ACA.
We're not buying that line.
the tax cuts are for people who make over $250,000 a year. How many people in this room are making over $250,000 a year?
I wish.
Nothern says the senator is in Idaho, but not in his office, and he's very interested in hearing from his constituents on the health care bill. The spokesman says he will make sure Crapo gets their message. But that's not what these moms want to hear.
It's easy for somebody to get a message and that message be contorted. But if he's in a room full of parents, full of his constituents, and he can really feel that message, I think that's so much more impactful, and that would show us that he is a good representative of our state.
After about an hour, Nothern says it's time for the sit-in to wrap up, but he assures them he's going to relay their concerns to Crapo. As Amber LaBelle packs up her two kids, she says she's exasperated that he was not in attendance and wishes Crapo would hold a town hall before deciding how he'll vote on the bill.
The idea that it is so difficult to get the attention of your elected official in our American democracy is just really frustrating.
Nothern says as someone who has twice battled cancer, Crapo is particularly sensitive to the healthcare debate in Idaho. The senator voted against the Affordable Care Act and has since voted to repeal it. Nothern says Crapo was leaning towards supporting the Republican bill before the July 4th recess.
We don't know all the changes this bill could bring. We want certainty, and that's the debate, and that's the input he's getting right now.
Senator Crapo will be back in D.C. next week, where the health care bill may come up for a vote. For KBSX News, I'm Frankie Barnhill.
I'm Samantha Wright in Boise with KBSX News. New data from the U.S. Census Bureau show Idaho is the nation's fastest growing state. Matt Gillum has a look at the numbers.
According to Census Bureau demographer Molly Cromwell, between July of 2016 and July of this year,
the population for Idaho increased 2.2% to 1.7 million.
That might not sound like a lot, but it's enough to make the Gem State the fastest growing state. Behind Idaho is Nevada with 2% growth. Cromwell says domestic migration is behind the rising population, meaning people moving to Idaho from other states. She isn't surprised Idaho took the top spot.
If you follow the trends from about 2013 on, there has been an increase in domestic migration for Idaho since that point.
Cromwell says the latest numbers show the West and the South are increasing in their proportion of the U.S. population. Idaho's eastern neighbor, Wyoming, experienced the greatest amount of depopulation. A full 1% of the cowboy state's population, about 5,600 people, left. Nationally, the U.S. population increased by about 0.75% to a little over 325 million. For KBSX News, I'm Matt Gillum.
Boise today lost its contentious bid to be the future home of F-35 stealth fighter jets. Instead, U.S. Air Force officials announced they chose National Guard bases in Alabama and Wisconsin as their preferred locations. Partly cloudy skies in the forecast tonight in the Treasure Valley. It's 533, and this is KBSX News.